Welcome to the Breakfast Leadership Show, where we interview global thought leaders on business, leadership, and life. Here's your host, keynote speaker, best-selling author, and chief burnout officer of the Breakfast Leadership Network, Michael Levitt.
Welcome back. I've got Jamie Tates on the line. Jamie, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I am awesome. Really looking forward to this conversation. And we probably should have just recorded from the pre-show because we dived right into it and it's lost forever in the ether, but that's okay. I'm sure we'll touch on some of the things during the chat. So for those that don't know you, why don't you share a little bit about you and we'll dive into the conversation.
Yeah, I'm the CEO and founder of Keystone Group International. We're a management consulting firm focused on helping organizations scale with less pain. Not no pain, because that's not possible, but less pain. Really helping them focus on having a really strong strategy, but also having leaders that can drive effective change, which is what your strategy requires. And as we talked about earlier, having a culture that can withstand the change. And I think that's what a lot of organizations are struggling with right now.
Most definitely. And the only thing that's constant is change. And it's funny how we fight change so much, but that's all we experience. And I think a lot of it comes down to too many of us, and I'm not saying us, you and I, but I'll just say it, the royal we, is we love Comfort Avenue. We want things just to be stable. And after the last few years, I can understand why people want that a little bit. At least just can I have a pause? You know, it's like, we get out of the pandemic and then, oh, inflation. Oh, you know, this and this. Oh, war. What? You know, and now it's just, you know, it never ends. But if you look back over the history of humanity, it's been kind of like this for a very long time. So nothing new. But with organizations, especially those that have had to make a lot of adjustments over these last few years because of the pandemic, changes of, you know, different technologies, AI, resources, supply chain, all of that kind of good stuff. You know, the work that you do creates what I like to call the foundation. You know, a strong foundation lets you be agile enough to adjust to conditions that require you to do things. And quite frankly, you know, have the team and the culture that's so important to be able to make sure that those changes are successful and sustainable.
Right. And it's this kind of two sides of the sword for a lot of organizations is strategic growth and doing new and exciting things doesn't happen without change. You can't continue doing what you were doing pre-pandemic. Now it has to change. But yet at the same time, we've got humans who have fear of previous change, which is where most of our PTSD comes from. It's not the change itself. It's that you've been part of a bad change in the past, right? And we get into that comfort piece. But what we've been talking to leaders a lot about in the last few years, and this really started as the pandemic was hitting, was educating them on basic human needs. So it doesn't matter what level you are in the organization, science has proven as humans, we have basic human needs. And those are for work and personal, and right, they just affect us in general. And they're things like certainty and significance and connection, which if you think about what we've gone through is we've lost a lot of those things. And we haven't replaced them as an organization. We've just tried to kind of fight a different fight. And when it comes down to it, it's human to human. And if people truly feel cared for, they will move mountains for organizations. But I think that's the biggest piece is where leaders are missing that skill set and that knowledge that that's what they need to be focusing on, and employees aren't getting it. And so it's just this constant gap and kind of frustration that's being created.
Seen that a lot, even, you know, throughout my career. You know, I think back to the companies that I absolutely have great memories of. You know, the leadership knew me. You know, they knew about my personal life, more or less. You know, they genuinely, you know, cared. They understood what was going on. They wanted to make sure that, you know, I had that work-life harmony going on. And if they had to ask me to work longer, then they would make adjustments in the schedule so I could have time off to recover from it or spend time with family and friends and really know, you know, who people are. You know the name of your kids or your spouse and understand those things. And it seems that in this ironically social media driven world, we've become more isolated in many work settings. And you know, we don't know the people. We don't know if somebody's single or married, or if they have kids or they don't. We just don't know. And it's frustrating because in many cases, especially if it's on site or even in a remote setting, you are working with these people consecutively for a long period of time every day, every workday. And it's, I just find it sad in many cases that there isn't that emphasis on, you know, you are a human being and you have obviously your needs and the things that you want to do in life, the things you enjoy. Should know those things, because it dehumanizes the work if you don't, and it just makes us all robotic. And well, you know, robots are good for certain things, but as far as interaction, and you know, although with AI they're getting better, but still never going to be the same as the human experience. But at the end of the day, it's so important for a culture and a workplace environment. If people are healthy and they feel comfortable, and as you said, they'll move mountains if they feel cared for. If your boss genuinely cares for you, you're going to go above and beyond, not for brownie points or, oh, this might get me a bonus. No, you're just going to do it. It's like, because you feel that you're cared for and you want to care for that organization because you're a part of it. So you just make it better for everybody.
Yeah, there's a staggering statistic that I share with executives that employees on average give us 40% of what they're capable of. And to a lot of executives, when I share that, the initial response is frustrated, right? Like, well, they're not coming in. They're not doing the work. I knew it, right? We're remote and they're not. And I'm like, time out. That's not what that stat is saying. What the stat is saying is we have a bunch of people under our care that have strengths and capabilities that they don't even know potentially that we can leverage and pull out of them. And that's our job as leaders. And so what it's saying is there's 60% being left on the table, and our job is to invest and challenge them, invest time in them, and then push them to be better. Because as humans, we're wired for achievement, right? We're wired for growth. It's one of our basic human needs. And so it's this idea of like, I did a big keynote and, you know, I'm standing in front of 500 executives and I said, how many of you have open positions you're trying to fill? Right? And this was, you know, 6-8 months ago, and everybody in the room raised their hand because everyone's got something, right? Some role they're trying to fill. And then I said, how many of you can honestly say you've fully maximized the capabilities of the people you already have on your team? And 3 people out of 500 raised their hands, and those 3 were lying. And what I mean by that is we need to think differently about who we have already and how we are getting performance out of them and caring for them, but they'll show up and do amazing things. I mean, you can see the case studies on what teams have done and what they've accomplished. Instead of just saying, let's go hire more people because we need to get more work done, how are we looking at the people and treating and inspiring the people we already have?
Reminds me of a story of a medical clinic that I ran. A couple stories real quick to share. One, getting more out of people. You know, when I took the organization over, that was a toxic environment, tons of turnover, lack of trust, lack of communication. They didn't like the doctors didn't like the clinicians. It was a mess. And I just went in there and sat down with everybody to an individual and asked them, one, if you were in my seat, what would you do? Is there anything that you need that would make you be able to do your job better? Or is something you have interest in that you haven't been able to do before here, whether it's a skill, a new offering to give to our patients, education, what, you know, what? And I just made that list and put it all together. And over time, just started rolling it out. The end result was, you know, the turnover stopped. Secondly, we had people from other clinics begging to come work for us. So like, I don't have any more spots. We don't have enough. But we were allowed to expand, which was great because it was an underserviced area. Typically didn't have access to the types of programs that we offered, and now they do. And all I did was I talked with them, and I asked, I listened, and I gave them what they did. And this was one of those things in the early days when the physicians were not overly trusting of anybody, including myself. I hired a receptionist, a medical receptionist. She didn't have any medical experience. She was actually, before that, she was a clerk at a cell phone company. And you're like, why are you bringing somebody in that doesn't really understand medical terminology to be a receptionist? said, if she can deal with irate cell phone customers, she can deal with our parents. And she took it upon herself. I made sure to get her the education that she learned over time. She had good mentors of different things that you needed to know in order to do that role well. So she invested in herself because I invested in her. She had a pretty long commute to our clinic, and then I got wind of a clinic very similar to ours that was literally 10 minutes from where she lived. And I talked to the director at that clinic. I said, okay, I've got an all-star. I do not want to lose her, but she lives 10 minutes from you, and she is as reliable can be, and you won't have any issues with her. And if you're open to it, I'll make the introduction. And he said, of course, you know, I want to meet this person. So I called her into a meeting. She's scared. She's thinking she's getting fired. And I said, no. I said, okay, here's the situation. I said, this clinic, are you familiar with it? Yeah. It's like, okay, they're hiring for your role. It's a little bit of a step up, not much, but a little bit of a step up. And I know you could do it. Would you like to go? I don't want to leave here. I know you don't want to leave here. I don't want you to leave, but it's 10 minutes instead of the hour each way. So you're going to get, you know, almost 2 hours of your life back if you happen to get hired there. So think about it. So the next day she said, okay, yeah, make the introduction. I'll have an interview. Long story short, she got hired. A few years later, she's running that clinic now. So now here's a cell phone clerk to running a medical clinic. Why? Because I invested in her.
Because a conscious leader invested in her and didn't do what was right for them, what was easiest for them. They did what was right for the employee.
And the more people like that that do those things and companies that are listening to this, didn't take anything extra out of me. Now, I had some interesting conversations with the doctors after she left. I'm like, wait a minute, you were yelling at me a few years ago about hiring somebody that's unqualified. Now you're yelling at me because they're leaving? Make up your mind, docs. Come on. but it was more of a badgering type of conversation and, you know, back and forth, not mad overly, I guess. But, you know, I hired somebody else that came in and did a great job. So it's just knowing the talent, knowing what potential talent is there, bringing it out of them. It's, you know, it's a coaching thing. You know, it's like a sports analogy. It really is. And I think the more managers and leaders start approaching things from a coaching standpoint, I think we're going to see some pretty significant transformations in organizations. Love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's an absolute requirement to lead into the future, right? I don't think it maybe was in the past in the way it should have been, but the generational changes are forcing it, right? Just the environment we're working in and how people feel is forcing it. And this doesn't have to be overly complicated. You know, I was thinking as you were telling your first story when you came in, is asking different questions is the number one thing that leaders need to be doing right now. Not the normal questions that you ask, not all about performance or that project or, right, when are we going to get this done? Start asking different questions. Number one, it's good for you because building trust and really understanding your people. It's also good for them to turn their brains on in a different way. Because we've also experienced the last 3 years is some atrophy in our brains of strategic thinking. And we're seeing it in leaders where they are struggling to think strategically because we've been in survival mode, right? Just execute and get through whatever we're trying to get through. And we have to start asking different questions to get people thinking and to solve problems better. And then the other thing, based on what you were talking about, what you did is we believe that culture is the leader's choice. So we get a lot of questions from leaders that are maybe in larger organizations, and they say, you know, I don't know how to influence our culture. Like, I feel like we've got some bad leaders up above or what. So it's an excuse. And what we tell them is you have the ability to impact the culture of the team you are responsible for. If that's a team of three or a team of 300, right? That is your job. And that is something you can impact. And I think giving leaders that power to say, this is on you to create the culture within your team, regardless of what everyone else is doing, right? Be the leader you want to have and really develop that culture. And that's what you did, right? With what you had control over. And I think we overcomplicate a lot of this and we think it has to be these really big things. And a lot of it's simple.
It's simple, just talking with people and, you know, gaining their trust. It's something that happens over time. You know, I looked for the low lying fruit, and I plucked them and say, here you go. And they're like, whoa, they were kind of shocked. Why wouldn't I do that? It's the right thing to do. It's a great program to implement. We don't have anything like that in this area. Let's send you, get the professional development budget spent up, and let's get you trained on this so we can offer this to people because it's a need. I said, I see it. You know, if I'm seeing it, it's definitely a need because I'm up here looking at different things. You know, down in the trenches where people are really struggling and dealing with a lot of different things. I may not have the same point of view as they do, but I know it's a need. Let's add it. And then all of a sudden you start seeing people getting healthier and they're happier and they're not using, the things that they were using or needing the medications that they were on because they were fighting so many different things. They were getting better. It was just because, okay, let's offer that program. Let's help people. And
about that, when you do that, it's a direct impact on business results. So yes, it's an impact on the people, which is what you're going for, but the business results change. Right? The people produce that. And I think we have so much data now that ties what you're talking about in your examples to actual profit and revenue. That is where it's coming from. And I think a lot of leaders they're missing that connection between the two.
Yeah. And it's, my original career was public accounting and everybody says, we got to generate more revenue. We're a nonprofit. We got to fundraise more, do this. It's like, let's look at the expense line. Let's start looking at the expenses, not the people, because that's usually the first thing they say, okay, what are we doing on headcount? It's like, we'll look at that later. All right. Right now, let's just look at the other areas of how we're doing things. Is there efficiencies we can find? Who's our office supply vendor? When was the last time we negotiated the contract? Who's our phone provider? Same thing. Is there pooled resources we can use? So all of a sudden, for a nonprofit, I found $250,000 in savings. We were able to hire 5 new people in a nonprofit organization to impact the community. What'd I do? I renegotiated a handful of contracts. That's it. Now I diminished that. It was a big deal, but it's like, look, it's as if we just got $250,000 grant for every year.
Right.
Just by doing something simple. And it goes back to your statement a few minutes ago about, asking different questions. It's like, okay, where can we find some savings first? Then with efficiency, guess what? We can be more productive, and for more productive, we can generate more revenue. It's connecting all the dots. And sometimes I think leaders get very pigeonholed in their vision and it holds them back and holds their team back, quite frankly.
Absolutely.
So your book, you did an amazing job on that. Congratulations on that. I always ask authors, why in the world would you give up so much of your time to write a book? Because it's not something I'm going to flush that out over on a Saturday afternoon,
I would say years of your life, you can't get back.
Bingo. That's it. At least, some people are like, I've been writing that book's been 10 years in the making. I'm like, wow. It's like, did you go back and revisit it? Because 10 years in this world.
Right.
Yeah. That's like going back to the 1500s, it's like, okay. Yeah. But so, what's the book about for those that aren't familiar and, why did you write it?
Yeah. So this was my second book, actually. So my first book was released in 2021, which was more leadership, personal kind of development, self-development. This second book was called The Culture Climb, and it was focused on a lot of what we've been talking about here today. It's just shifting the conversation on culture, trying to simplify it so that it's not this really complicated, nebulous thing that we can choose not to walk towards and really understand. And it was written specifically for the average business leader who doesn't have a deep HR background, doesn't, have a degree in organizational effectiveness. For the average business leader that controls a culture, right? A team of people that they can impact. And we know starting at that level is how we're going to create impact in organizations. And so that was our goal with the book, is to simplify culture, to make it really tangible and make it something that you can take action on.
I love the format of the book. It's right to the point, gets to here, do this. Here's why. Here's this. And those are the types of books that I love. Not knocking Tim Ferriss's Tool of Titans book. It's a great book. It sucks.
Get through it.
It sucks carrying that in a backpack. You got to go buy one of the big camping. You're going to be out, you know, climbing Everest kind of backpacks to be able to hold that book. You know, love the book, Tim. But my goodness, that thing, it's like maybe in a series. But, you know, he could break it up into series. He could have 10, you know, or 50 books. Excuse me. It's like, okay, lift weights. All right. I can't find any weights. Oh, there's Tool of Titans. There we go. One, two, you know, get it. But no, it's an amazing book. But yeah, it's not one you're going to go. Page one, it's like, yeah, it's, but it's an amazing, I'm curious, I'm sure he's got it on audiobook. It's got to be like 300 hours or something. It's ridiculous, but it's all good. But no, again, you know, congratulations on the book, yeah, because it's really important. I think if organizations get the quote unquote culture thing right, not to diminish it or, you know, do that, it's such a foundational thing. And it improves businesses. And as we talked in the pre-show, it's like when companies are happy and healthy, they got happy, healthy employees, your customers are going to be happy. They're going to buy more. You're going to tell their friends, your company is going to do better. You're going to grow. You're going to be able to expand beyond your wildest dreams. You know, we look at the successful companies that are out there now that are doing great things and retaining people and not losing it. It's like you go to it, you're going to find that they've got their culture pretty much spot on. It's not a set it and forget it.
Right.
But it's definitely one that is, you get it right and you just allow it to ebb and flow and adjust as need. Because if you don't, it's, you could run into toxic environments where everybody's quitting all at once and then you can't deliver. And well, you know, then you're one of those companies that, you know, was, you know, making billions of dollars and now they're no longer in existence. And that happens all the time.
It does. It is the competitive advantage of the future. We're seeing it in clients that really engage in it. They still have great products and services. They're good at sales. Okay. That's important too. But when their culture shifts, they can tangibly feel it and they can see it in their results. So it's becoming a competitive advantage for companies that really double down.
And the old accountant in me is saying, oh, that impacts the bottom line. And when you do that, that's when things are great. So loved our conversation, Jamie. Where can people get this book and find out more about you and the amazing work you're doing?
Yeah, they can go to theculturecline.com and get all the information there. That also links back to our business, to all of my social. Jamie Tates on social. Would love to connect if people want to have a conversation, right, or really struggling or trying to do this in their organization, because like what you do, what we do, it's really advisorship to help people understand how to move forward, right, in these difficult aspects, because it's not always easy. But would love to have conversations with people that we can impact.
Definitely. And I'll have all that information on the show notes. So, Jamie, thank you for doing all this amazing work. The world needs more of you to do it, because happy, healthy companies make better things for all of us, and we definitely deserve that. So thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Breakfast Leadership Show, part of the Breakfast Leadership Network. Visit breakfastleadership.com for tips on empowering your business and your life.